Welcome everyone to episode number 12 of Talking Shop Down Under. I have with me tonight Tatham Oddie. Tatham, how are you?
I'm good, thanks Richard. Yourself?
I'm just fine, dapper and dandy, in fact.
That's the Aussie way of saying it.
Yeah, I'm bloody all right, mate.
This is why it's Talking Shop Down Under.
Exactly, because it's all, you know, we've got to go really bogan Aussie accents and everything.
I'll try.
Just for the Americans who are listening to us. Actually, we should slip into American accents at some point. It's a bit too southern, maybe. So, Tatham, do you want to give us a bit of an introduction to yourself, your life, mission?
So, I am yet another Redify consultant, and I'm a senior consultant / technical specialist web. That's part of my double barrel job title. So, my focus is on standards-based web, building really, really big websites that work nice in a big public environment.
And so that's pretty simple, really. It's just crack out some HTML and whack some CSS on it and you're done, right?
Yeah, a bit of doc type decoration. You put the doc type on the top and then you don't bother writing compliant HTML for the rest of it. And use lots and lots of session states so that it's completely unscalable.
And tables everywhere for layout.
Oh, yeah, it's the quickest way to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, but you just drag out hot dog.
Oh, yeah, front page will do. For all the, just clarifying, for all the Americans, we are being sarcastic. This is not part of American humor, but don't do any of this.
All right, so in all seriousness then, building big websites and even, I suppose the principles there, are they the same for small websites?
There's definitely a lot of things you can do which will apply to small websites, but it's kind of a cost-benefit question. Things like, for example, if you're building a really large website, then your images, you want to serve them from a separate domain that's actually cookieless. So, images.myecommercesite.com. And the reason that that's cookieless is then you save all the extra HTTP header traffic of shipping those cookies backwards and forwards. Now, sure, that would help with a small website, client performance and stuff, but you're probably not going to have time to go to those sorts of lengths. So there's quite a spectrum of things you can do in that space.
Okay, and obviously spinning up a second server and everything else is rather silly.
Yeah, exactly. So, however, I think the biggest thing that allows scaling, so when you look at websites, they're a perfect example of where you need to scale quite often. And then you've got scale up, throw hardware at the problem, or scale out, add separate servers. And you definitely want to be doing scale out in a web environment because the web's designed really well to do that. As a technology, it's designed to be stateless, and you basically send everything you need up and down the wire on each request. Sounds inefficient, but it actually works really well for scaling. One of the problems, though, if you drift into ASP.NET land a little bit too much, even if you're sitting there going, oh, well, it's just a really basic website, you start to use things like session state and whatnot. A, it instantly limits your scalability because, okay, you can go and try and have some shared session server or use Velocity or something, but really that's just a bit of a patch to the problem in many cases. But you're starting to treat the web like something other than the web. And I think as soon as you start to get into that too far down that abstraction, like the abstraction's useful of things like web forms and stuff, but if you get too far down there and start to rely on all that state, you usually end up biting yourself in other ways anyway. So that's a perfect example of something which, as a principle from building large websites where you need to scale, don't use session state, but that applies down really nicely in every project. You know, so I have things like that just as like a bit of a blanket recommendation.
Okay, web forms though, which is generally what most web guys are using, or at least it was 8 months ago, is all about session state and view state and everything else, right? Trying to get that desktop development experience onto the web, drag and drop controls, and I can treat my web application a bit like a WinForms application and go from there, right?
Well, view state's kind of okay. I'll probably get shot for saying that, but it's sure you've got to manage the size, but you've got to be careful what you put in it and whatnot. But as a concept, the idea of pushing state down to the client and then the client bringing it back is actually totally okay. That's how the web's meant to work. Its session state starts to get a bit icky. And also, when you're looking at things like view state, you can get a bit more intelligent about that in a lot of cases of actually using multiple forms to do things and then posting things off to different URLs and whatnot. So start to embed that state in different ways. Can clean that up a bit. But otherwise, generally the concept of pushing state into the page, all good.
So do you want to give an example of what you're talking about there?
Okay, let's say we've got we're building an admin system for an e-commerce site. We have a list of products. And then in that grid, we have an edit button and a delete button on each of those items. The web-formy way to do that would be you'd put a grid view in. You'd put in something like a hyperlink or two hyperlink buttons on each of those rows. And then when you get the server-side click event for that, you would then take them into an edit or a delete interface. Treating the web like the web, you're really better off to put the effort into actually building a link off to an edit page that encodes the right information. Or in the case of the delete button, if you don't have a confirmation or something, you don't want to be deleting straight off a link, because then a crawler or a prefetcher or something can pull that. It should be a post. So you want to wrap that in a form and actually have a little form there that goes and posts to your delete page and embed the state in that. Rather than trying to, if you put all the trust in the data grid to remember which buttons are in which rows and so on, then you're going to have this ginormous view state in there, which basically has all of your data objects in it, so that when it comes back to the server, it can rebuild the data grid in memory and map the row accordingly. So going back to a bit more of a client-side approach of using multiple forms.
And that, obviously the view state, large view state's nasty because not so much of the download speed, but the upload is quite slow.
Exactly.
On most people's connections.
Because you only have one ASP.NET server form per page, it has to upload all of that view state no matter what you're doing. So in that case there, of that example of delete and edit button, you clicking that delete button is going to, say you've got 100 products in this list, it's going to have to upload the view state for 100 products so that it can then rebuild that whole object model in memory so that it can work out which row you are in so that it can then trigger the appropriate the event handler with the appropriate context. So you've got that really slow upload process where people just don't have good uplinks usually. The internet is, or consumer world is very much ADSL, asynchronous.
Spit it out.
I'm getting there. But then also all the server-side cost of actually having to go and rebuild that whole object model and control tree and so on, which you just don't need to do.
So that'll drive CPU usage up on the server, obviously, as well.
Yeah, you got CPU, you got memory. It's something that you can only do in a synchronous way, so it's just generally not a good approach. The best approach, I can't remember where I saw it, but there was a comment that said you can't make CPU cycles go faster, unless you don't change the hardware, obviously, but you can't make them running faster. The whole point of performance improvement is just to do less of them. So improving the performance of your code, run less stuff. If you don't need to rebuild that control tree and parse all that view state, just don't do it.
Very true. But no one would ever put 100 products on a page in a grid anyway, would they? Surely not.
Oh, never.
Never.
They do that in WPF. Data grids are okay.
All right, so you've, along with Damian Edwards, have put together a small project called?
So leading into WebForms MVP, we've had a few, but this is the one worth talking about. Damian, ex-Redify guy, in some of his consulting projects, he started to introduce a model view presenter framework into WebForms projects. This is not unique. It's quite well published, but it's a model that works pretty nicely, or as an architecture works pretty nicely. And then last year we were involved in the redevelopment of Grays Online. And coming along to that, Damien applied that same sort of approach to it. And we started to build that out more and more through the project and get it quite refined. And we quite liked the idea of it. This is the point where I started working with him. We quite liked the idea of it, but he was getting sick of having to rebuild it at each client. And particularly if you want to try and evangelize this as an approach for developers to use, you don't want to be going up and saying, oh, you can just build this whole architecture and build your own framework to do it every time. So that's where it broke out. And we thought, all right, well, why don't we actually go and develop this off into an open source project? So we started again. So for me, it was the second version of it. For Damien, it was about the sixth version of it. And we released that as WebForms MVP. Then what we actually did was we went back through Grays Online, where we had the bespoke implementation, and we actually, over a couple of months, completely reversed that out and replaced it with WebForms MVP. And that was kind of our really big testing ground. So we're running a couple of million requests through that a day across a farm of servers. So from that, we're pretty confident that we have now a commercially usable framework for doing nice architecture within WebForms.
So how long did it take to put together the first one, like the, I suppose, V.1?
Well, it's one of those things that's quite organic because you can go in there and you say, all right, well, if we just want to attach a presenter to our page, then you can just go new presenter in your page constructor and pass in the page via an interface or something, right? You can do it in like 5 lines of code. But then you start to say, okay, well, we don't really want to do this coding approach in every one. We actually want to start to put a bit more framework around it. So then we went and introduced attributes that allow you to do it. And then you want to go and add IOC container support and so on and so on and so on. It just kind of snowballed. So probably over the first 2 or 3 months of the Graze project, we were still quite actively working on building out that framework, which is why we got to a point where it's like, well, hold on, why are we doing this in a closed environment where we could be opening it up and sharing it for lots of people to get access to?
How's the take-up been? I know when it first popped on the scene, there was a little bit of interest.
Yeah, it's we've been talking about it a little bit at various conferences and things. The latest one was actually the Mix conference in Vegas. So we've been getting a reasonable amount of visibility that way. It's also been picked up on a couple of things like Hansel Minute's podcast and whatnot. But so that got us a reasonable surge of activity. The most interesting one lately, though, is .NET Nuke 5.3 actually now ships with it out of the box. When we were over at the MVP summit this year, back in February, March, we were talking to a bunch of the .NET Nuke guys there, and they were talking about how that they were working on their own MVP implementation for the next version. And when they saw what we'd developed, they thought, well, hold on, what's the point of us having yet another one? So they actually rolled Webform's MVP into the box, and they now have a module presenter. So that's all fully supported as well. So in that sense there, we're not actually totally sure of how many people have even picked it up. Like we've got the CodePlex stats, but now we're into that almost like wholesaler arrangement where we've got these other frameworks picking it up and we have no idea how many end customers are actually using it.
Well, DNN's pretty small, right?
Yeah, it's only got like 500,000 sites that it runs on.
Yeah, so there probably wouldn't be that much usage out of it yet.
Yeah, and they're only small websites. They don't count.
Nah,
Stuff like afl.com.au.
AFL. Who's interested in the AFL, seriously?
Yeah, all those people down south.
Okay, so now you were talking about CodePlex. So when we're talking about stats, what sort of numbers are we talking about? Just out of curiosity more than anything else.
This is some sort of pop quiz, isn't
It
it?
is. I don't know. I haven't looked. I could
I'm
look it
going to
up.
quote a number. I'm going to quote a number. If anybody goes to the CodePlex site and finds it's wrong, then it's not my problem.
Seven.
I think we're sitting in the range. We've just ticked over about 5,000 downloads. And about 20,000 page views on the CodePlex site. We actually have webformsmvp.com as the project site. And despite how easy it is to go and drop some Google Analytics code onto a website, we haven't done that. So I've been keeping all the IIS logs, and for the day where I get around to it, I will actually go and dump all them into a database and have a look at how much traffic we've got there.
It's all about priorities, right?
It's all about building the framework, not about actually knowing who's using it.
Right, so I suppose that does bring up another question about the framework versus using it. There was a question on Twitter when I mentioned I was talking to you tonight, from someone who wants to know when there's actually going to be some documentation on that site, because you go to the site at the moment and you hit, oh, this is the Webform MVP project, go download. And then it's pretty much dig through the source to figure out how it all works.
Yeah, so our project roadmap at this stage, we're currently sitting in CTP 7, and that's about 12 months worth of releases, various bug fixes, performance fixes, and feature additions along the way. We have one feature left before we officially call it V1, and this is also holding back our documentation. What we've wanted to develop is a convention-based presenter discovery strategy. So similar to MVC, how if you name your view this and you name your presenter that, voila, they magically get wired together. In order to achieve that, we needed to break out from one of our core components the concept of how it decided which presenters needed to belong to which views. And that was something that had grown quite organically over time. It was one of those beautiful 400-line classes.
Oh, nice.
So we've now broken all that out in a nice big, well, not nice big, but just separating that out through a re-architecture, which is also having to introduce the concepts of things like fall through. So if one discovery strategy can't find it, convention, then we need to be able to fall through to our original attribute-based discovery strategy. And making that API of a sufficient quality that people can just make up their own and plug them in reasonably.
So
Now,
you said this was organically grown, right?
That's a nice word for it, I think.
Okay, so that's the new euphemism for crap code, is that right?
It was beautiful code. It was just too much in one place. But so we're pretty keen to get that in as an approach. Now, the problem is if we really should be writing documentation now, but if we go and start pushing out lots of documentation now, then it's all going to have the attribute-based approach through it, which as soon as we cut V1 is going to be legacy, because we want people to be using the conventions and sticking to those. So that's what's held us back. Technically, it shouldn't have, but that's what we're trying to achieve, is to get that over the line. And there's one feature left that hasn't been re-architected into this new model yet. So that's kind of where the project plan sits. As soon as that clicks in, V1 gets cut, and then we can start pushing out all of the official guidance around how to use it and whatnot.
But you've got some sample apps and things like that floating around, right?
Yeah, so one of the things that is in the source is a fully functional feature demos app, which goes through everything from your Hello World through to things like cross-presenter messaging and stuff like that. There are actually some screencasts up there on the WebForms MVP site around the more complex areas of it, so stuff like shared presenters and, again, cross-presenter messaging. And finally, because we're in many ways, for a lot of our end users, acting in that kind of wholesaler space where we've developed this underlying framework, but people like .NET Nuke have repackaged it, because they are exposing module presenter, which sits as a wrapper around, or inherits from our base presenter class and adds .NET Nuke specific functionality, they've also gone and published their own documentation, blog posts, screencasts, and so on how to use that. So there's a lot of people out there at the moment who are using WebForms MVP with documentation that looks like it's .NET Nuke, it looks and feels like a .NET Nuke feature, and they probably don't even know it's our library. What we need to do now, though, is bring that back for the users of the core library.
Cool. All right, so probably an obvious question at this point, and one I'm sure you've answered at least 100 times before, is why MVP instead of using MVC, MVC2, or you know, one of the other, or FUBU MVC, or one of the other projects that's floating around? Why do an ASP.NET web forms MVP thing?
The big thing is that, say you've got a large web forms website at the moment,
mm-hmm.
The cost of going and redeveloping that into MVC is obviously quite significant. And also, it's not something that you can do iteratively. You can't just go and take one section of your site, cut it over, and then deploy that, do the next section, and so on. So what WebForms MVP allows is that it's a totally add-on-based approach. Because it uses user controls and attaches presenters to the user controls themselves, what we've put a big focus on is making those user controls fully functioning on their own as they stand. So you can go and place them on the page. The page doesn't need to know anything about it. It doesn't need to have any special attributes or base classes or anything in order for that control to work using WebForms MVP. So what this allows you to do is in your existing application, say you've come in and you've decided, okay, I want to just this login page, it's grown out over time, it's pretty messy, all the logic in it. I really want to go and clean this up. What you could do is take the contents of that page, mm-hmm. push it out to a user control, start to build up your presenter and your view interface and your model and so on, write your unit tests around it, you can commit that code, and the page that hosts that control doesn't have any special changes to it. You've now got fully deployable solution still, where one section of that uses an MVP architecture and is unit testable. So then you can start to chip away at your app and improve each of the parts of your app. Because that then introduces the ability for you to quite easily use things like inversion of control for injecting your services into your presenters and then your presenters into your user controls, that then means that in the process of doing this, you'll probably actually go and improve all your various services anyway and come up with nice interfaces for them. You'll start to use inversion control properly, which then means that, say you do actually then want to move across to MVC, we've even made that task easier for you because it's allowed you to clean up that code as you go, getting ready for it. So that's the big scenario.
So you just kind of described MVP as a stepping stone to MVC, is that right?
Yeah. Potentially, if you want to get to MVC, or you might just have an existing investment which you want to maintain, you want to improve the code a little bit while you're there, but and you're not going to justify a redevelopment.
But you do want to be able to test the damn thing.
Exactly. So it basically gives you testable web forms. So that's the one scenario which is not an MVC compete thing.
Mm-hmm.
You also then have the MVC compete scenario of really, I'm starting a brand new project, which one do I go and use? We have to be, when we first launched the project, we did pitch it as a bit of an option against MVC, But now we're trying to, it's obviously a very touchy discussion, and it's something where it's use what you want, use what's right for your team. Personally, I do use a mix. I quite like the MVP model in some scenarios, mainly because it allows me to use the control abstraction of web forms. If you start to think about something like an e-commerce site, you've got a menu down the left-hand side that's data-driven because it has categories in it. Up the top right, I've got you have six items in your cart totaling $4,000. Somewhere up there, it's got you're signed in as Tatham, log in or log out. And then in the middle of it, I'm going to go and show some actual product data because I'm on a product page.
Mm-hmm.
In an MVC world, how do I get all of those different pieces of information in? It can start to get a bit messy. You want each of those areas to act independently. So then you start to get into things like sub-controllers and render partial and whatnot, which to me, it doesn't feel that clean. People who aren't thinking that far down around the architecture or perhaps don't know about functionality like that, sometimes they'll actually go and have something like a base controller where every single action goes and loads stuff like the category data for the left-hand menu and pushes it into a some sort of base view model type or base view data type. And that gets even messier. Or maybe you then go and actually put that in your master page or something, that code, separate to your controllers, and then that's not testable. So, I don't know. For me, it just feels like it gets a little bit icky very easily. Now, that's not to say you can't do it properly. There are definitely people that can. But making that really easy for developers across the board is something that the control abstraction works very nicely for. Because what that allows you to do is have these islands of interface with functionality behind them, so user control with a presenter attached, where it's testable functionality, and then you can just take that island and place it onto a page or a master page. So all I use pages and master pages for is for compositing user controls. And then those user controls each act as these little islands of functionality.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that there's definitely designed towards more of a composite site. If I'm building, like the MVC model, I think works really nicely for something like the grand example of Twitter. It has simple input, it has some nice clean rendering, it doesn't have crap flying all over the screen, and it's focusing on doing one thing in that page and doing it really well. Or if you want to have really good control over the wire, such as you're building some sort of REST API. Now, sure, WCF or something's great for publishing the REST, but if you're building a really big API, it's going to have lots and lots of consumers on it, then you want to have byte-level control of that API so that you can manage versioning and things really well. That's where MVC is a really great fit because it gives you access to that lower-level HTTP sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's those types of scenarios where I think it does work really well, but you are kind of handing over that control abstraction in exchange for that.
Okay. Moving on, the adoption of WebForms MVP has been quite good, and you've got this wholesaling thing going on, but there's been some other news and movement in the project recently, as I understand it.
Yeah, so we've been working for the last about month and a half, 2 months, with the CodePlex Foundation, and just last week the press release went out to announce that we're now a member of that foundation, which is pretty cool, because that puts us alongside things like the Orchard Project, MVC, Contrib, as well as the Ajax Control Toolkit.
Do you want to explain what the CodePlex Foundation is for those who aren't maybe so aware of it?
So the big process that we had to go through to get it in, and why it took us kind of a month and a half, 2 months, is that we had to ensure that all of our code was kind of IP clean. All of the intellectual property had a big green tick on it. So for a government or a corporate or even just a small business picking it up, if you were to go and use WebForms MVP in your project or even actually wrapping it in another library that you are shipping or something like that, it gives you the confidence that we're not going and using code that we've borrowed from elsewhere, we're not infringing on patents and so on. And it has some of that kind of confidence and protection around it. It also, for us, makes it really easy to keep that confidence moving forward because we've now got things like contributor agreements. So when a contributor joins the project, we've got it's pretty simple. It's just a two-page form, but it just asserts things like the code that they're checking in really is their code. It's not owned by their employer, which is quite common in somewhere like the US. If they choose to patent the technique they use here in the future, then they automatically grant us a license to that patent and so on. So it's quite easy for a contributor, but it's also easy for us where we didn't have to go and write up those forms or engage lawyers or something like that. So, yeah, the main part is around that kind of confidence and cleanliness.
And so what the intent then is that the amount of people contributing to the project will increase, or it's more just a case of giving corporates a bit more of that warm and fuzzy feeling that they can use this open source product without feeling like they'll get burnt?
The primary goal for us was that warm and fuzzy feeling, which will hopefully allow more people to adopt the framework, particularly if you're in an organization which is a bit more traditional and you want to pick it up or something like that. It's the type of thing where you can go to the boss and say, hey, look, it's part of this foundation. They have all these various processes in play. There's a whole bunch of lawyers and big name industry people all over it. This is good for us to use. But the other part for us was, yeah, also around actually picking up more contributors, having a little bit of process around it. So it's not hard, but it is now a nice, smooth process of quite clear what needs to be done. We're hoping that will actually allow us to get some more people on board. And we have had a few people join recently.
Given that the things on Codeplex, I know I saw on your Twitter stream you were playing around with Mercurial and things like that recently. On a little different project, but are you planning to change the source control for WebForms MVP from...
We already have.
Oh, have you? I didn't notice.
Yep. We cut it over about a fortnight ago, and we've already had somebody fork it, make some modifications to it. They built an auto-fac presenter factory for us.
Yep.
Send a pull request. I've pulled that in. We went through a code review process and then pushed that down to the core repository.
Fantastic.
So that will be in the next shipping version. Indeed. And the whole distributed models worked really nicely for us in that allowing somebody to have their own repository, go and do all their own things, and then come back to us when they're ready and say, hey, I've got this fork. Can you check it out? We're then able to code review that, send them back some recommendations. Then when it's ready, we can actually go and merge all that down. If you go back to something like TFS, which, so it was previously sitting in TFS in Codeplex, we would have been going and sharing shelf sets around, or if you're using the Subversion access to it, then we would have been emailing patch files and stuff around.
Or creating branches for people and...
Yeah, so well, if you create a branch, then within Codeplex, you can't manage the security at a branch level. So then we have to give everybody rights to the whole solution from day dot. Obviously, if we're trying to build confidence for people using this, and there are a lot of a number of large production websites already using this, mm-hmm. we need to be very careful about the code that does go into it, because as soon as we go and publish a new version, there are teams who are subscribed to our update list, and I know that they're dropping them into the test build literally within like 48 hours of us doing a drop. sense there, we need to be confident in what we release.
Oh, very good. So what's next for the project then?
So
obviously
focus.
V1 and the documentation we talked about, but beyond that?
Beyond that, it's really around working on integration, trying to allow you to use it in as many different scenarios as possible. So one example of that is there's a bit of work going on at the moment, somebody in the community who has been working on integrating it with SharePoint so that you get unit testable web parts. So there's another scenario where this can come in handy. If you've unfortunately been stuck with working with SharePoint, you can now at least unit test your web part code. So getting that sort of ubiquitous access to the framework across the board, I guess, is going to be the V1.5 focus.
Mm-hmm. And there was a question on Twitter as well about performance and if there are any issues related to performance with using MVP versus MVC, just because of, I suppose, the stack that you're going through is a little bit different.
Yeah, it is a bit deeper around. Obviously, we've got that whole control model that needs to be built up and whatnot. However, I've been involved in projects where we've built performant websites, and in doing all of the testing around that and all the analysis, I've never got to a point where I've said ASP.NET WebForms, the runtime is what's holding us back. It's always back in our code in some way. So in that sense there, I wouldn't be too worried about the model, the two different models. As for actually WebForms MVP itself, there's some pretty insane optimizations in there, thanks to, in particular, Corneliu. So things like in our default presenter factory, if you're not using an IOC container or something, the way that we actually create an instance of the presenter, activated.create instance is apparently too slow. So what we actually do is we create a dynamic method. We emit the IL opcodes in order to load the constructor arguments onto the evaluation stack, call the constructor of the type in question. We then compile that method in memory and we hold on to a reference of that method basically as a delegate. So that then each time we want to create an instance of that type, we can look up that delegate out of the dictionary, execute it, and wham, we get the correct type out.
And that's faster than create instance?
It is indeed, because we're able to cache each of those calls, and it's basically not using reflection beyond the first time. And the constructor call that we have, because we're holding on to that dynamic method, will actually get jittered the first time, and then all we're doing is triggering that delegate, so kind of calling that function in memory. So that's kind of pretty insanely fast, and we're able to do all of that still in medium trust. So we've... There are definitely more things we can do, and we do have a list of optimizations that we want to do, particularly stealing some of the ideas from the MVC project around how they do app startup, the initial warm-up and things like that. So if you're in a shared hosting scenario where the application's getting stopped and started, we can do some optimizations there that reduce the amount of reflection we need to do. But otherwise, it's already fairly heavily optimized. And to be honest, it also includes a little bit of opinion in it. So if you go and look at our base presenter, you will find you can access the request property, the response property. You can access all your cookies and stuff like that. Everything you can normally get to, a query string, everything you'd normally get to from the page is properties. You won't get to session, though. If you want to get to session in one of your presenters, you have to go and write http://context.session. It's just that little bit longer and slightly less discoverable as a way of discouraging people from using session state. So that there's another case of where we're trying to help people build better websites, better quality websites, and use the web in the way that we think the web should be working.
I don't have a problem with opinionated frameworks. I think it's a good thing.
Never. Well, nobody's complained about lacking session yet, and they can still access it if they want. We're just suggesting that it's not a good idea.
That's a good suggestion. All right, so one other thing that did occur to me with .NET 4 coming out and the changes with the ASP.NET runtime and everything else. Are you planning to make any changes around that at all, or it's you looking really to stay on more a 2.0 targeted base for the moment?
So currently we're targeting 3.5. At one stage we were actually requiring the C# 4 compiler to build it, even though we were still building for 3.5, because we were using the contravariant and covariant generic type parameters, which are supported in the 2.0 runtime, just not in the C# 3 compiler. For various reasons, we're not currently using those optimizations anymore. But anyway, ASP.NET 4 space, there are definitely some features there that we want to support around particularly route data. Now that you've got page routes in the latest version of WebForms, and those are easily accessible on the page, we also need them to be easily accessible on the presenter. And there is already some code in there to do that, which we need to make sure some versioning stuff and everything's right. But that should be shipping in 1.0. In the same way that MVC has a single library that works with both the 2.0 runtime and the 4.0 runtime, we'll be shipping a single library that gives you that same experience across both.
And that won't require the 4.0 runtime at all on the machine?
Nope. So it will successfully run on 2.0. Just if you have 4.0, some other stuff will work as well, all in the one library.
Sweet. All right, and I think that's probably getting towards the end of where we're at. You've got DDD Melbourne coming up, I believe.
Indeed. So this Saturday down in Melbourne, it'll actually be the first session that I've done purely on WebForms MVP. Until now, it's kind of been something where Damo and I in our sessions will be talking about ASP.NET and web development in general, and then just as part of it, we'll talk about testability, and we'll mention WebForms MVP there. But now that it's actually part of the Codeplex Foundation and everything, we think it's at the point where we can start talking about it on its own. And enough people voted the session up at DDD Melbourne. So look forward to going into it for about an hour down there and showing it all off.
Well, good luck with that and enjoy the weekend.
Thank you.
And
should be good.
So it's this Saturday being the what date?
That'll be the 15th of May.
15th of May. So if you're listening to this after the 15th of May, you've missed out.
You can still go to Melbourne if you like, just don't expect to find us there.
Though there will be a DDD Sydney coming up, I believe.
Which I think is on the 17th of June.
So if you want to hear it at Sydney, you can vote for it there on dddsydney.com whenever that turns up.
Yep, indeed.
Excellent. All right, Tatham, we will wrap it up there. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Richard.
My pleasure. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you next time on Talking Shop Down Under. It's a wrap.